We know that exercise does not solve everything, but I think we have for many years underestimated how much it can help. I mean, you just feel better when you're moving.
Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. This week on the show, we connect with sports psychology consultant, Dr. Penny Werthner, to explore the link between running and mental health. We talk about stigma, resources, and the myriad positive effects that running can have on mental health and overall well-being. But first, I'm joined by Canadian running staff writer, Maddie Kelly, to bring you the highlights from the last week. This is The Rundown. Last week on The Rundown, we brought you some pretty spectacular results from the indoor track, but this week is all about off track. So Maddie, let's start with what went down on the cross country course.
So this past weekend were the NACAC Cross Country Championships that took place in Port of Spain, Trinidad. So for those who don't know, NACAC is the North American, Central American, and Caribbean Championships. So Canada sent four teams, two junior teams and two senior teams, and all of them ended up on the podium, which is super exciting. So our U20 women were led by champion Taryn O'Neill, and the rest of the team wasn't far behind. They placed first, second, third, fourth, and seventh, which is crazy good.
Quite a sweep.
Yeah. And our U20 men had a similar team outcome, placing first, second, third, sixth, and ninth. So that's super exciting that the juniors did so well. And that would probably be the first team, like their first time representing Canada for a lot of those juniors, which is cool to go there and still do well despite the pressure of your first team.
Totally great to have that really like big confidence boosting experience to come away with a gold medal from your first international competition.
Yeah, no kidding. And then in the senior category, our men's and women's team both claimed silver. So the senior women's 10K race, our top three runners, Jess O'Connell, Natasha Wodak, and Jen Lalonde, are all national record holders on the track in their respective events. And our senior men also had really impressive performances, with the top five runners placing in the top 12 overall.
So tell us about the conditions, because it was not exactly ideal for Canadian runners.
No, it was 30 degrees this weekend in Trinidad, which basically, if you've been anywhere in Canada, is about a 60 degree swing, which is an insult to your body. So it's really impressive that if runners have been training in the Canadian winter, and almost all of these runners have, they perform so well despite the conditions. So NACAC serves as a kind of warm-up for the upcoming World Cross Country Championships, which will take place in Denmark just over a month from now. So these performances bode really well for the Canadians in Denmark.
But again, sort of an interesting choice to put NACAC in a place like Trinidad when Denmark, by all accounts, will probably be closer to what it's like in Canada in March.
Oh yeah, it'll be cold.
Right.
And so probably these runners had to do some heat acclimation beforehand, you know, like running on the treadmill in sweaters and pants and stuff like that. So
just getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll serve them well somewhere down the road.
Well, at least, like I said, their confidence should be up having all four teams performed as well as they did at an international competition as sort of a lead up, and they still have another month to prepare. So we'll be keeping track of how things go in Denmark in a month. And then, so moving on to the trails, this was a big weekend for Canadian women. There were two podium finishes by Canadian women at ultra trail events in the US, plus another bronze medal finish from a few weeks back. So tell us what happened there.
So first, Mallory Richard came third at the Black Canyon 100K in Arizona, and it's the second Golden Ticket Series race this year.
Okay, so explain to our listeners what that means.
So a Golden Ticket is obtained by placing first or second in a Golden Ticket race, and this gets you an automatic entry into the Western States 100 Mile in June, which is one of the oldest and probably most prestigious 100 Mile trail races in the world.
So Mallory Richard fell just short of getting one of those Golden Ticket spots, placing third instead of in the top two, but still like a really incredible performance.
Exactly. And then Bandera 100K was the first Golden Ticket race back in January, and Vancouver runner Kat Drew got third there as well. So even though no Canadians have a Golden Ticket so far, Canadian trail women are proving that they're pretty badass and having the podium parties in the USA.
Yeah.
And finally, Vancouver athlete Chessa Adsit-Morris came third at the formidable 50K in Auburn, California on Saturday. So the race doubles at the USA Track and Field 50K National Championships. So she beat out some of the top American runners in the race and picked up some really good prize money.
Nice. Go Canadians in the US.
Yeah, we love that.
All right. So the great performances on the cross country courses and the trails. We've got a little bit of road news that we would be remiss if we didn't cover.
It's Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, you remember him?
Yeah, we all know him. So he, love him or hate him, ran a 3:02:13 of the Austin Marathon on Sunday, which, you know, decent marathon time, but more importantly, it was for charity.
Right.
So he did this thing called the Charity Chaser. So we started behind everyone, and for every person you pass, the marathon donates $1 to a charity of your choosing.
And he actually was very successful with this endeavor. Approximately how many runners did he pass?
All but 57. He was number 58. And which is pretty amazing. And especially considering you're chasing in a marathon, a 3:02 isn't a bad time, because I think he started on his own, or if he probably with the other charity chasers, but that'd be a relatively small group. And the chances of like someone being able to run the exact pace that you hope to in that group is pretty slim.
Yeah, absolutely. So go Lance, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so we've covered trails, cross country, and road. We have a couple exciting indoor track events to look forward to this coming weekend. Let's just chat briefly about what our listeners can watch for.
It's conference week across North America, and we've got the AUS in the East Coast. We've got RSEC, which is the Quebec region. We have OUA, which is Ontario, and we have CanWest, which is literally everything else. So all of those conference meets will happen this weekend, and then athletes will go on from there to U Sports, which is the national championship 2 weeks later in Winnipeg.
Great. Nice balmy spot for a race.
Yeah, people love Winnipeg in March.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've heard that. And we've got some Canadians south of the border competing in conference championships this weekend as well.
Yeah. So like Canadians like Aurora Rinda, who's killing it at the University of Michigan. They just ran a huge school record in the 4x8. She's already PB'd in every event she's raced this year. She's a freshman. She's doing a really good job. So she'll be someone to watch at Big Ten. And I believe she's just out of qualifying for NCAA indoors. So hopefully she can make that happen this weekend.
Yep.
And then also another one to watch is Marco Arop, who just set the national record in the indoor 800. Last week, it was the second fastest 800 in the world. It's an NCAA top 10 all time. So he's heading into conference this week, probably feeling really good. And I seriously doubt anyone can beat him.
Very, very exciting. And of course, Jenna Westaway, who was one of our other national record setters last weekend, will also be competing at the
OUA.
OUA.
I was actually
called.
Yeah, OUA. I kept writing it today. And so Jenna used to compete for Calgary.
Right.
And when I was writing these predictions, I kept putting her in the CanWest column. And then I had to go back because you're just so used to seeing these people run for a certain place. But she runs for Guelph now.
Right. So coming off that 1K indoor record, she'll be feeling pretty confident going into her final collegiate conference championship, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's a big cornerstone.
All out of eligibility.
Right.
Yeah,
it happens to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So in non-Canadian running news, after a very narrow miss of the world record in the mile last weekend, the world 1500 meter indoor record went down on Friday. Mani, tell us about that.
So Samuel Tefera won the World Indoor Tour in Birmingham, setting a new world record of 3:31:04. He's only 19 years old, and he just beat out Kajelsha, who missed the mile world record by a hundredth of a second 2 weeks ago. So, like, if you think you've had a bad week, this guy missed the mile world record by a hundredth of a second and then got, like, beat effectively by a kid in a race that he, on paper,
should have won. Right.
So that's tough for him. I think he's still going to give the mile world record a go on March 1st. We'll see. But yeah, here's hoping you can dust yourself off.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's your rundown for this week. Thanks again, Maddie, for keeping us up to date on all the running news. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Kate.
Appearances can be deceiving.
Even when life looks great,
many are suffering in silence.
Mental health affects us all.
Me. My son.
My friend.
Even if you're an athlete.
Or not.
Even if you're well known.
Or not.
It could be any of us.
When we talk about it, we can help each other.
Today, join the conversation. Let's talk.
Today is Bell Let's Talk Day. Join the conversation.
January 30th was Bell Let's Talk Day. This mental health awareness campaign started 9 years ago and was pioneered by Olympian Clara Hughes. Clara was one of the first high-level athletes in Canada to speak and write publicly about her struggles with mental health, and she encouraged others to do the same. Over the last decade, more and more athletes have come forward, sharing their own stories and encouraging a cultural shift towards greater acceptance of the issues that affect millions of Canadians. But stigma persists, and many people still have a really hard time being open about the challenges they face. This can be especially difficult for elite athletes who are in the media spotlight and often cast in an aura of invincibility. After all, being strong, tough, and victorious haven't always been seen as going hand in hand with mental health struggles. Enter Dr. Penny Werthner. Penny is a sports psychology consultant and the dean of the Faculty of Kinesiology at the University of Calgary. She's also a decorated Canadian track athlete. She won medals at the Pan American and Commonwealth Games and competed in the 1500 meter at the 1976 Montreal Olympic Games. One of Penny's current roles is to consult with Athletics Canada track and field athletes, helping us keep our mental game strong during training and competition. But Penny's advice is applicable to every level of runner, whether you're building towards your first 5K, aiming for a Boston qualifier, or competing for a medal on the world stage. Improving mental health is beneficial for everyone. Luckily, as Penny explains, running is a great place to start. I caught up with Penny last week in Salt Lake City, where she was working with Canadian athletes during the Freestyle Ski World Championships. So Penny, thanks so much for joining us today. It's great to have you on the Shakeout. Let's jump right into this. You're a sports psychologist. You've worked with a number of different athletes over the years. You know, it's long been believed that regular exercise and specifically running have been linked to lower cases and or severity of mental health issues. So how do you see this manifesting in your practice with the athletes that you work with?
Well, I guess there's two ways to think about it. I think if we just think about mental health or mental illness, we know now and we talk about now quite transparently, I think that, you know, athletes have really the same incidences of mental health issues that the rest of the population does. I think 10 years ago we used to think, or 15 years ago we used to think, or maybe even more recently than that, we used to think that athletes would not have those issues. And I think now we recognize that. So I think that's huge. And on the other side of the equation, I think we know, and we have so much evidence, you know, really good research out there that has looked at mental health, mental illness, and the benefits of movement and exercise, however you want to define that. So I think those two things coming together, when we have athletes who have mental health issues, I still think we can, for the most part, manage them quite well at the elite level, and still have an athlete deal with or manage those issues and still compete very well. So I'm not sure that that's exactly what your question was, but I think when we bring the two things together, I mean, we know that exercise does not solve everything. But I think we have for many years underestimated how much it can help individuals deal with other issues in their lives. I mean, you just feel better physically when you're moving.
Right. And so to that point, we know that the actual act of running inherently comes with a lot of these mental health benefits, right? So there's the endorphin release, which is that runner's high that you'll often get. You know, getting outside into fresh air is really beneficial. Running with a partner or a group, you know, there's that social element. And then, of course, there's this feeling of satisfaction that comes after a run. But there are also a lot of lifestyle components to being a runner, especially if you have race goals, that can be really positive for mental health. So things like consistency, routine, you know, setting goals, focusing on good nutrition and sleep, that recovery component. Are there any other mental health benefits that you find are specifically associated with running?
Well, I think you've mentioned a lot of them, Kate, and I think they're all very relevant. I mean, I think the one piece is regarding what's going on in one's brain while we're actually running. And there's still a lot of things we don't understand about the brain. But in the work that I've done with athletes with biofeedback and neurofeedback, what we to some degree know and have some evidence for, although still not enough, is that when when you're running. I mean, obviously, if you're having a conversation with folks, you're on an easy run, you're benefiting more from that social environment as well as you're doing something physically. But we know also in a run, sometimes the mind slows down and moves into what we might call alpha or theta. And that's also either a bigger recovery state, or rather a recovery state, or also a creative state. So, you know, if you run alone, sometimes you have great creative ideas as you're out there running that 10 miler or 10K. And that's also slowing. So again, it's slowing down the brainwaves, because I think sometimes when we're stressed, so not so much depressed, but stressed about things, which then can lead to depression, but stressed is that we're thinking too much, and our brain is going on and on and on, getting into busy brain or rumination, which is not a healthy state to be in for any length of time. So running can absolutely help with that as well.
Yeah. And so I think that's a really important distinction that you've brought up. You know, it's tricky sometimes. It's a tricky line for people to navigate, the difference between sort of that general malaise or a feeling of being a bit down versus clinical depression or other diagnoses that are related to mental health. But to that point, when it comes to using running as a tool for mental health, as we've discussed, a lot of people find it really beneficial. And again, for some people, running may be enough on its own to help quell some general anxiety in their lives. But more recently, there's also been this sort of glorification of running as maybe too great a tool for mental health. And so by that, I mean, for example, one of the phrases that pops up a lot on social media is, running is my therapy. So what do you make of this, sort of finding that fine line between using running as an outlet or a mood enhancer, particularly, you know, through the darker months of the winter, versus using running as a replacement for other sorts of therapy or resources?
Well, you know, I don't mind that saying, because I do think running is a great activity for the body, and the body's connected to the mind and the brain. So I think it can really help. But I think we also love, seemingly as human beings, to simplify things and say, this is the solution. And I don't think running is the solution to everything. I mean, I think it's a huge factor both in, I mean, and you just named them, Kate, a few minutes ago, in terms of, you know, physical health, mental health, all sorts of pieces. You do set better goals and you eat better, perhaps, when you start setting goals you're running. But I think the other thing that helps athletes, at least if we want to talk about elite athletes, Olympic level athletes that I work with, is also having a social support network, because we all need people to talk to. And we do know and do, again, have some great evidence that, you know, therapies like cognitive behavior therapy, which is, you know, talk therapy, that's also really useful. So I don't think it's as simplistic as, you know, running is going to solve everything. I think running solves a lot of things in some ways, because it benefits us physically and mentally. But it's not the only thing. And I think that's why we know when we're trying to get individuals to exercise and set, you know, running programs or workout programs, that also having, you know, social support, so it's actually fun to do, especially when you're starting out and learning how to do it, that helps a great deal as well. So I think it's nice to say this is the answer, but I think we're pretty silly when we do that, because again, every person that's facing some depression, you know, how they get out of that, manage it, live with it, depends on them. And it's sort of, there's a number of pieces there that could go into them sort of being able to manage it effectively.
So is there a tipping point there? Like, is there a danger that running can actually become detrimental to mental health? And I know, again, that's a very complex question. I know there's all kinds of different diagnoses that maybe go into being more, for instance, compulsive about exercise. But lots of people do use running as a tool to sort of escape or to take a break from other stressors in their lives. You know, another sort of colloquial phrase that's used is that people are running away from their problems when they're running. And I know that that's a simplification, but do you see cases where running can actually, yeah, be detrimental to their mental health?
It's such a great question, Kate, because I think, you know, one could become obsessive about anything one does. And, you know, if you have that type of personality, then you become a bit crazy about all sorts of things you do. And whether that's the latest diet or, here's how I'm going to be the fittest, or here's the workout I'm actually going to do in the gym, or I absolutely have to run like 10K a day or it's not going to count. So yeah, I do see that. And it's then working and helping those individuals to understand you don't need to be that obsessive with it. And so we look for other kinds of activities they can do that can take them away from just being obsessive on one thing. But yes, it can happen for sure.
And I know that so many of these questions and the answers to them are, again, very complex and very specific to individual cases. You know, I think a lot of our listeners are not necessarily the elite or professional athletes that maybe you work with on a more regular basis, but they still see, you know, most of the benefits that we've talked about. I mean, I think that those are pretty universal regardless of ability level. But one thing that I've heard both from my elite runner peers, as well as more from recreational runners who still maybe have some, you know, fairly high personal goals, is I hear them talk about this comparison between their sport and their mental health. And one of the terms that's used fairly frequently is that both depression and hard run training or racing invoke a sense of darkness. And I think one of the differentiating factors there is that endurance athletes who struggle with depression sometimes talk about being in control of the pain or the darkness when they're running, and they see that as actually very beneficial for them. So do you think there's something to be said for maybe gaining a sense of control over your mental state while engaging in like really hard exertions? And do you see a correlation between this element of control while running and being more able to regulate your mental health outside of running?
Yeah, such another, I mean, it's an interesting question. If we think about that group who sees this as another way or a way to gain control, I mean, I don't see that. I see that as a fine thing, again, as long as it doesn't become, you know, dysfunctionally obsessive. But yes, if it gives them a sense, if it gives one a sense of control over what they're doing, then that's beneficial. Because often when you're not feeling good about yourself or facing mental illness issues, is that's what you feel, right? You don't have that sense of being able to do anything effectively. So if running can give one that, then that's really beneficial. But I still think that's a small number of the population. You know, we just did a study at University of Calgary with young adults who were not yet diagnosed with mental illness, but sort of in the first and second categories of four categories, and put them through, you know, a fitness training program. And none of them had done any running before. And we did find significant results in terms of their mental illness or them not going to stage three or four. And so, you know, we have so much good evidence on the benefits of running for mental health. I'm not sure why we don't have it as an actual plan of attack with those individuals. We should be using physical activity, running, being mobile, and actually being somewhat intense doing that, because we also know from the exercise physiologists that level of intensity now also changes things. I mean, you change something physically, you change something in your brain. I mean, it's connected by the spinal cord. So unfortunately, we've sort of separated the brain and the mind from the body and thought that they're two different things. And of course, they're not.
Yeah. And there's been so much talk recently, at least in general knowledge circles, and I'm sure that this has been discussed for a long time in the mental health professional community, about the plasticity of the brain, right? And about this correlation, of course, between the brain and the body, and that learning a new skill or taking on something new, or in this case, as you mentioned, perhaps changing up the intensity of your workout on a regular basis, can actually create new neural pathways. And then that will have these fantastic mental benefits in addition to the physical.
Yes. And I think we certainly understand now that the brain can change, and we certainly understand the connection to the body, but there's still lots of things we're, you know, still exploring from a research perspective, understandably so. But I would still be a fan of doing lots of exercise with individuals who are, you know, in a depressive state, because I think we know it can help.
So shifting gears just a bit here, you're a former Olympic athlete yourself. How do you find that your experience in the sport influences your work with the athletes in your current role?
Well, I think it's a huge benefit. I mean, I think it's a huge benefit that I was, you know, a high level athlete, because, you know, I've absolutely experienced the winning, the losing, the being not making a team, making a team, being certainly depressed after a competition that doesn't go well. So I think having experienced all the ups and downs of trying and working to be one of the best in the world, I think it really, A, gives me a huge amount of credibility with athletes, even though when I competed is quite a long time ago now, and allows me to have a great understanding or a really deep understanding of what athletes are going through and how hard, you know, the goals that athletes set for themselves in winning world championships, in making national teams, in winning an Olympic medal. I mean, they're not easy. And it's easy to say they're not easy, but when you've actually lived it and you actually see it regularly, you really, you know, have a better capacity, I think, to work with athletes and help them deal with that and, you know, still go for it. And yet at the same time, accept that it may not happen. And it's really that combination that's so difficult to work towards, where you realize, you know, what your goals are may not happen because there's more than just you who wants one of those medals or wants one of those spots on the team. And yet you still remain committed to, you know, working your hardest and giving your best and being both physically and mentally prepared, and then see where it all falls out. So that's the tough combination. But I mean, I love working with athletes, so it's fun to do.
Well, and as an Athletics Canada athlete who very fortunately has access to you as a resource, I can say that, yes, we're all very lucky to be able to work with someone like yourself. So last week was Bell Let's Talk Day, which is one of the most popular and, I guess, widespread mental health campaigns in Canada. And I think that it's fair to say that we've made pretty great strides over the last few years towards greater acceptance of mental health struggles. But of course, stigma is still a very real factor in our society. What are some of the tools or resources that you recommend to your patients? And again, I know this is a broad question. Every case is going to be slightly different. But are there any general suggestions that you might have for folks who are struggling with some mental health issues, who maybe can't get by just with running?
Yeah, it's such an important question. I think it is a huge step for us as a Canadian society to now be so transparent in talking about mental health and mental illness issues. And I think some of our athletes like Clara Hughes, who have been so open in talking about her struggles. And there's many things that are useful about what Clara has said, but certainly the fact that she could still be, you know, an Olympic medal winner and be struggling with depression, I think is a great message on many levels for athletes to understand. So awareness is great, but it doesn't change anything. So it's our first step has to be there. Our second step is to really, if we stay within the sport system, is to, at least if we're talking about high level sport, you know, to educate coaches to recognize understanding and then know where the resources are, because I don't think we should have the expectation that coaches can directly help athletes if they're struggling, but to recognize it and not see it as a weakness, because I think that's one of our issues in sport. We've seen it because we always talk about being mentally tough. And so we see that as a weakness when you have a breakdown, and that it shouldn't be seen like that. So coaches need to be educated. And then I do think now we have a group of really good resources through the Canadian Olympic Committee, through the sports centers, the Canadian Sport Institutes, where there are individuals that you can go to that can actually get you help. And so I would always encourage athletes to reach out to those resources. And I mean, you just said this, Kate, there is stigma still attached to that. And I know I talk to a lot of athletes and I talk to our students at University of Calgary where, you know, there still is a stigma. They sometimes don't want to go to the wellness center, even though they know it's there, because people will see them going there. So, you know, having resources that are anonymous that you can go to. There's also a new center started up in Ottawa with individuals that you can talk to online. So there's been such a shift in the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years with those resources that are available for individuals, at least on the national level. You know, and then if you have a good friend to just talk to, I mean, you still need to seek out an expert, I think. But at the same time, having a social support system is so important. The issue is that often individuals don't have that. And whether they're away at school or they're, you know, isolated at work. So if you don't have that, then that's when you really need to seek out a professional.
Obviously, one of the biggest challenges that a lot of people face is that, unfortunately, ongoing mental health care is not built into our general care system that's covered by national or provincial socialized insurance. And that's a huge gap that we still have to fill. You know, a huge barrier for a lot of people to access good mental health resources is that they're often prohibitively expensive. So like I said, the first step is to recognize and acknowledge that you could benefit from a resource like a mental health professional. But the next step is finding one that you can afford, which is tricky for so many people. And again, that just sort of adds to the stigma, right? Like if it's something you have to go out of your way to find and pay for, then it's just one more barrier.
Totally. You're absolutely right, Kate. And you know that. Still, I mean, I have lots of just normal friends, not in sport, who see therapists, but it's not the norm. It's seen as if you're seeing a therapist, it's like a really bad thing. So you're absolutely right. We should have coverage for these people so that you could actually do it.
So I have a number of friends who are young men in particular, and they talk about going to see a life coach. And what they're really doing is working with a psychologist, but for them, it feels better or, you know, more socially acceptable or whatever the reason is. It feels more comfortable for them to say that they're seeing a life coach rather than a mental health professional, even if that's really what it is. And I guess, you know, if they feel the need to say that in order to make it happen, that's probably okay. But in the same way, it seems a bit unfortunate that that's the terminology that they choose, because there's still this insecurity or shame or hesitation to say that you're going to see a therapist.
Yeah, so it does prove the point. There's still great stigma attached to it. And we know there is. We know there is. But, you know, you got to find someone, you got to pay for someone, and you got to find somebody good. It's all not easy. I do think the more we talk about this, the more we normalize it when you're not feeling good about yourself and to seek out help. I think one of the things I'm doing with our students is actually creating some peer-to-peer counseling. So it'll be limited because they've really got to know their boundaries. But I think a lot of the students have come to me and said, you know, we're just stressed. We need somebody to talk to. So they haven't, you know, flipped over to a side where they really need serious help at this point. So if we had more social support systems in place with people trained to a degree, to a level, I think we could resolve a lot of, not everything for sure, but we could, you know, have people feel more comfortable in their skin and understand that what they're going through, others are going through, and normalize it a bit, because sometimes that is just the case.
We want to remind everyone that if you're struggling, there's always help. We've linked some free mental health resources on our website. No one should suffer alone. We want to thank Dr. Penny Werthner for her contribution to today's episode. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, or any place that you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Shakeout Podcast. Until next week, happy running and be kind to one another.